And we're holding on page 38 in Yuma, beginning Hotzilot Hamishim, Ois Melal. Continuing talking about the Masechta, continues talking about the Avoda of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Now this parak focuses on what he does in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and afterwards in the Heichal with the Ketores and the sprinkling of the various bloods. So the first Mishnah points out that now you have the pasuk says he takes Meloy Chofna of Ketores Samim Daka. He takes a double handful of Ketores and brings it into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and what? A double handful, meaning both hands cut together, and they're the amount that, yeah. So the Mishnah describes then that, so now what they had is he would pour that into a spoon, he would carry that spoon together with a pan full of coals into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then in the Kodesh HaKadoshim he would transfer it from the spoon back into his hands and pour it onto the coals. So the Mishnah mentions that however much, you know, different kohenim are going to have different size hands, so they would make the spoon in accordance with the size of the Kohen Gadol's hands. So the Gemara says, Omru Olamah, Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, they said about Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, one of the kohenim, in the second Beis Hamikdash, Shoyachofen Abbas Kavim Memloi Chofno. He was able to hold four kavim in his two cupped hands. Now a kav is equal to the volume of 24 eggs, because there are six volumes of an egg in a lug and four lugim to a kav, so 24 eggs to a lug. So he was saying 24 to a kav. I mean, he was saying four kavim, so that would be the volume of 96 eggs. So his hands were pretty big. But Omer, and he used to say, how did I get to be so big? He wasn't the only one, by the way. There's a Mishnah in Kalim that mentions somebody who also lived around that time, Ben Bakiach, who, based on Midrashim, is the same as Abba Sikra from the story of the Churban in Masechta Gittin, where it says that his fist was the size of the average person's head. So you had big, strong people at that time. Anyway, so Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis said about himself, Kol HaNashim Zordu, all the other women, Zodu, which we'll see in a second what Zodu means, the Zered Ima Ololagag, the Zered of my mother went up to the roof. In other words, it outdid all of them. So in other words, he's saying that something that his mother did gave him tremendous size hands and tremendous koyach. So what is Zodu? Ika da'amri ba'arsan. Some say that Zodu is related to the word zirid, which is a type that and arsan are types of cereal. So they're types of Rashi describes based on different Gemaras that these are made by breaking up wheat kernels into pieces. You have a kind of grinding where you grind them into smashing them. You put them in a mortar and you pound them and you break them into two pieces each from each grain, or three or four, whatever the finer the consistency. They have different names. In particular, then Rashi brings that if you break each kernel into three apiece, that's called zerid. If you break it into four apiece, that's called arsan. So now these are kind of things that you give them. They're made out of wheat. They're very healthy foods. So you give them in particular to people who are sick or to women who are pregnant in order to strengthen them. So according to that version, ikad amri ba arsan, some say that he's talking about the arsan, which is related to zerid, that his mother ate while she was pregnant with him. And then in that case, v'chidde Rabbi Bar Yonason. In that case, then it fits with what Rabbi Bar Yonason says. Drama Rabbi Bar Yonason, Omer Bichil, arsan yofel l'choli. You should know that arsan, this food, this farfel-like food made out of cracked wheat, is very good for a sick person. So in this case, it's also good for a pregnant woman. And so he's saying that the zorid, the arsan that my mother ate during her pregnancy with me was extra good. Marsha points out, on the face of it, it doesn't really work, though. Rashi is telling us over here that arsan and zorid are two different consistencies. Zorid is one third of the grain, and then arsan is one quarter of it. Sorry. Zorid is where it's broken into four pieces each, arsan where it's broken into five pieces each. Whatever the case, the point is not the same thing. So Marsha brings from Oruch, who says actually that Zered, according to this, would actually be two different things. So you'd have Zered, according to this, would be, we find in the Gemara, for example, from the Mishnah, is Chavilei Zerodim. So zrodim are like branches or of grasses or herbs. So describe, in other words, like you have, everybody goes and gathers branches and herbs, but my mother's gathering was the best of all. It went up to the roof in a way that other ones didn't. So then, according to that, then it's saying a separate thing, that some say that what he said was that her arson that she ate during her pregnancy with me was the best of all arson, and therefore it made me particularly strong. The ikadami b'shichvas zer. Others say that Reb Shmuel ben Kimchas' statement about Zodu is referring to the shichvas zera from which he was formed. Because a baby like this, you have a certain volume of shichvas zera, but the baby is not formed from all of it, only from the best of it. So, v'chidera babohu. In this case, what Rabbi Shmuel is saying fits with what Rabbi Bohu says. The Rabbi Bohu Rami, Rabbi Bohu pointed out a seeming contradiction between two psukim. You have the Shira of David by David Lashem as Divra Shira Azos, where we have it in Tilim, Kapitul Yurtes. We also have it with a lot of variations. Not by Varuch David. By Varuch David is something else. That's when. Vayvarach David was at the end of his life when he gathered the people together and urged them. He said, I've already set aside a lot of gold and silver and other things for the Bismikdash. Who else is ready to donate? And everybody, and then many people said, we're willing to donate, and they collected a huge amount. Then David was very grateful for that, and then he says the tefillah Vayvarach David. No, so here we're talking about by Dabar David Lashem as Divrei Ashira Azos. We have it as Kapitel Yud Chesed Tilim. We also have it with many variations in Shmuel Beis, Kapitel Chof Beis, and we read it as Daf Torah on the seventh day Pesach and also Parshas Hazinu. So there's a lot of differences between them. One of them is the following. Siv, the version in Shmuel, David says, Vatazreini Chai Lamacham. Now, Vatazreini, the simple sense is the same as Vatazreini in Tilim. So it means you girded me. It means that you strengthened me for war. But Vatazreini Chai LaMochama. So the version in Tilim has the Aleph, the version in Shmuel does not. So what does it mean? So Rabbi Bohu explains, Amar David Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, means David is saying to Hashem, you did two things for me to make me as strong as possible. First of all, Zeri Soni, you winnowed me out, meaning like when you have grain and you winnow it to get rid of all the straw and chaff and all the unimportant parts, and you're left with only the good grain. So first of all, David is saying to Hashem, you refined me, namely that out of all the zera, you picked the best of it for me to be formed from. So that way I already begin with a certain amount of natural strength. And then Vizeraz Tony, and then on top of that, you were Mizariz me, you made me more quick and more strong on top of that. So not only I started out with genetic gifts, but on top of that, Hashem, you made me strong on top of that during my career. So therefore, so now Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchas is saying in a similar vein when he says, Kol Anashim Zodu Vizeret Ima Ololagag. What it means, in other words, like my mother received and became pregnant with the best part of my father's zera, and therefore I became the strongest as possible. This is what Shmuel ben Kimchas is saying about himself. That's how he became so big and strong and had such enormous hands. Rabbi Hananel, actually, here on the Gemara, brings a variation of that. It's not just, I mean, in that case, then how is he crediting it to his mother? It's not like she controls what part of the Zera fertilizes the egg. So rather, he brings, based on a Gemara in Sanhedrin, we find the Gemara in Nida and other places, that Tashmish during the last few months of the pregnancy is good for the baby. It helps make the baby stronger and cleaner and so forth. So therefore, so he's saying that his mother did that, even though during pregnancy, it may not always be so comfortable to do it, but she had in mind, she wanted the best for her baby, for me, and therefore she made sure to do that in order that Zevi Sonny, in order that this way I'll come out as strong and clean as possible as the results of that later Tashmish. So the Gemara continues, Omru Olivar Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchas. Now they said another thing about this Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchas. Another, besides that we're saying that he had huge hands, but here's another story about him. One time he went out and talked with a certain Arab, with a goy in the marketplace. Now the Chachamim made a gzera that goyim are considered like zavim, and therefore you have it these days in Shlosh HaPrakim of Rambam, their saliva is metame a person midraban. Midaraisa, an actual zav saliva, is metame a person that lands on. Yeah, saliva. Yeah, roit means saliva. Yeah, spit from his mouth. So not only the person himself that it lands on becomes tamei, but also his clothing becomes tamei. So now it happened. He was talking with this Arab in the suite. The nitzat sinur pibah bigdoy. So a bit of saliva flew out of the Arab's mouth and landed on Rabbi Shmuel's clothing. So therefore now he's tamei. The nichnas yeshevav achiv b'shemesh tachtov. So his brother yeshevav had to take over and do the avodah on Yom Kippur. V'rasa imen shnei banei kohenim gedolim b'yamechad. So their mother got to see on one day that two of her sons served as kohenim gedolim. That's true. Marsha points out, by the way, now earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara had listed the good kohenim gedolim of the second Beis Hamikdash, the ones who lasted more than a year. We had over there a short list of them. Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis of our Gemara is not on here. Now, on the face of it, since the Gemara is going to go on to say that there was another time this happened as well, means he lived through at least two Yom Kippurs. So why is he listed over there? Marsha says, actually, it may be, we had over there in the list, Rabbi Shmuel ben Piyavi. He might be the same as Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis. So Piyavi would be his father's name, Kimchis would be his mother's name. Here, since we're focusing on the schus of his mother, that first we're saying that his mother ate the best food or did the best things during her pregnancy to make sure that he'll be as strong as possible, then therefore we're crediting his huge hands to her. And now we're going to credit the fact that he and his brothers got to serve as Kohenim Gedolim, we're crediting to her also. But their father's name then, or the father of some of them at least, Marsha points out that some of them may have been from different husbands, as we'll talk about soon, was that, so his father's name at least was Piyavi. So it's actually the same person. Anyway, when did this take place? Now on the face of it, it would have had to be on Yom Kippur itself. And that's how Rashi explains it. And that explains how he's Tomei and he can't do anything about it, because once he becomes Tomei, he has to Toivel. Fine, in principle, he could Toivel for that on Yom Kippur, because it's an order, even though you're not allowed to bathe on Yom Kippur, but you're allowed to when you're in certain cases, you're, if the Kohen Gadol himself does, during his Avodah. But never mind that. Now he's Tomei, but he maybe in principle, he'd be allowed to Toivel, but it doesn't matter. He'd need head of Shemesh anyway, so he'd have to wait till the evening. So meanwhile, his brother would have to take over. On the other hand, Marsha says, what's the likelihood he would have been out in the street on Yom Kippur talking with this Arab? He brings from the Yerushalmi that it was actually Erev Yom Kippur. Now, the problem with that is, if it was Erev Yom Kippur, what's the problem? Why can't he Tovel and do Head of Shemesh and still be able to do the Avodah on Yom Kippur? So there are several different explanations, among them that maybe it really was on Yom Kippur after all. Maybe just it was an important, it wasn't Sam an Arab, it was an Arab king. Maratz Chayes points out, we find during that period of the Second Beis Mikdash, there were periods when the Arabs were allies of the Jews. A lot has changed since then, obviously. So now when this Arab king wants to talk with him, he doesn't really have a choice. He has to go out there even on Yom Kippur in order to talk with him. The other possibility, Maratz Chayes brings is maybe it was, or I don't remember whether he or somebody else, anyway, one of the Mephoshim brings, maybe it was on Erev Yom Kippur after Shkia, so then it's too late for him, even if he tovels. That's the point. So if we say that it was on Yom Kippur, he's in the middle of Yavodah, what's he doing in the market, Bechlal, then you would have to say that it was not Sam an Arab, but rather an Arab king. As opposed to, if you say that it was Erev Yom Kippur, the way the Yerushalmi says it, then the possibility is maybe it means it was Erev Yom Kippur late in the day, right after Shkia, or very too close to Shkia, for him to be able to Tovel and have Head of Shemesh. Whatever the case, so his brother Yeshevav had to take over.
One time is another.
Then again, they said about Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, Pam achas yotze v'sipur im odin echad b'shuk. Another time, also on Yom Kippur or Erev Yom Kippur, as the case may be, he went out and talked with a certain goyish nobleman in the market. The nitzat sinurim v'pivav got him, and again, a little saliva flew out of the guy's mouth and landed on Rabbi Shmuel's clothing. V'nichnas Yosef achiv v'shimesh tachtav, and Yosef, his brother, went and served instead of him. So again, their mother got to see two of her sons serve as Kohenim Gedolim on the same day. Why didn't Yeshevav do it now? Maybe Yeshevav was also Tomei, but I think there is actually, I once saw, I didn't have a chance to look, I forgot to look it up today. I once saw something, I think from Reuven Margolius, where he explains, Taka, why each time they had a different substitute. Whatever the case, that's how it was. So in fact, the Gemara says, Tonin Abanon, Shiva Bonim Hoyul Ola Kimchis. Kimchis had seven sons, V'cholan Shimshu V'Kohenim Gedolah, and all of them served as Kohenim Gedolah. They didn't actually, now they weren't, none of them were, most of them weren't appointed Kohenim Gedolim. Rabbi Shmuel was appointed. The other ones were saying just they had these kinds of incidents where they had to take over for one reason or another temporarily. But altogether, she got to see seven of them serve as Kohenim Gedolah. And we're not talking about the choice which Rishonim points out. We're not talking about that any of them passed away and had to be taken over by the other, because we're saying this is a great praise for her. That wouldn't be obviously if she got to see children of hers pass away. So no, all seven of them were alive, and all of them at one time or another served. So the Chum asked her, what did you do? What special thing did you do that you had such a schus? Now, why are they wondering about her? Why are they not wondering about her husband? So Marsha says, first of all, maybe they knew that her husband is not such an important guy that he should have such a schus. Second of all, Marsha says, maybe her children were not all from one husband. Maybe she had some children from one husband, and then he passed away, and then she married another kohen. After all, an amona is allowed to marry a regular kohen; it's not a kohen gadol. So therefore, those would be reasons why to attribute it to her. Oitza Bolum on the side over here says that really those two answers are both a bit of a dirty. So he says, well, so it was therefore what?
The schus of the mother who had children.
Yeah, but the schus, you could still argue, the father has a schus as well. He teaches his children Torah, for example. But anyway, so Marshal gives these two answers. Oitza Bolum gives another answer, but Pashkus. He says, look, Timchus's husband may have had another wife who he also had children with, and they didn't go and become Koinim Golem even temporarily. So therefore, they realize it can't be his schus, it must be her schus. You could say that. It's possible to say, says Oitza Bolum. And why even say that Kimchus was married twice, as Marashah says? Whatever, these things happen. But Ben Yo-Yo just has another Balabatish answer as well. He says, very simple. It could happen before all of them got to serve as Kohen Gadolim, their father was no longer living, so therefore he doesn't get to see it. Kimchus was still alive, she got to see it, so therefore the Chachamim realized it must be some special schus of hers. Anyway, whatever the case, what was it? Omr Lahem, so she tells them, Mi Yomai, in all my life, Loi Ro Kuris Basi Kale Saori, the beams of my house never saw the braids of my hair. Meaning, in other words, even though in principle a woman is allowed to go without her hair covered inside the house, it's only when she goes outside that she has to keep it covered, she was extra tzniistic, and she constantly kept it covered even inside. So Omr Lah, so the Chacham told her, I don't know about that. Many other women did that, and it didn't help them. So in other words, the implication seems to be saying that she must have some other schus beyond that. However, Rashi actually brings from Yerushalmi that they did endorse what she said, and they actually quoted in this connection a pasuk from Tehillim. You have the famous pasuk called Kvod Vas Melech Pnima, from which we learn the concept that tznius is a great value for a Jewish woman, and the pasuk continues, Mimishbet Sait Zahav Labusha, her garments will have squares, settings of gold. So therefore, we learn from that such a woman will have the schus to have children who are Kohenim Golem, like she did, where they wear the choshen and the ephod that have gold settings. So according to that, then it comes out that the Chachamim, not like our Gemara is saying that you can't prove that because lots of women did that, but rather that the Chachamim are saying, you're right, that is in fact your schus. Then Yehoyada kind of reconciles the two of them. He says many other women do it with the intention that they should have the schus, that their children should be Kohen and Golem. You didn't. You did it purely the Shem Shemayim. Therefore, you had that schus, and other women who had that kind of ulterior motive in mind did not. In fact, he brings in this connection. The Yerushalmi also says on that the Chacham said your name Kimchis is a very appropriate name. Everybody else's flour, when they grind up their flour, is only kemach, plain flour. Yours is kimcha de kimcha, is the solus of the kemach, is the best of the best. Meaning, in other words, Ben Yehoyada says that's the verb. They're saying everybody else, yes, they grind up their flour. Yes, they do these maisim tovim, including this extra degree of tzniyus, but they do it with a little bit of bran or whatever mixed in, as in it's not purely the Shem Shemayim, but you did it purely the Shem Shemayim, and therefore you have this schus. What's the connection? Why is it? Why is the appropriate reward for that her children should be Kohen Gadolim? So one of the explanations is because she's acting in an extra tzniistic way. The Maharal says this, Ben Yehoyada says similarly, that she's acting in an extra tzniistic way. Therefore, she has children who get to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the place of the ultimate tzniist, because nobody else are, and they accept the Kohen Gadol once a year. Agav, they tell of this, it's not just in those times. We find closer to our times, they tell a similar story. The Chazon Ish, as everybody knows, was a great Talmud Chacham, an outstanding Talmud Chacham in Posik. He had a brother as well, who was also a distinguished Talmud Chacham, not of the caliber of the Chazon Ish, but still he was also a distinguished Talmud Chacham. So they once asked their mother, where did she have the schus to have such children? And she said something similar to Kimchis over here, that she was also careful that even when she's washing her hair inside the house, she said she'd have other women standing over there with a towel over it to cover it as much as possible. So we see, even in a time when there were no Kohen and Golem, then you still have a similar kind of idea. By the way, the Gemara in Hodias tells us that a Talmud Chacham is greater than the Kohen Gadol, Shenichnas Lefnai VeLefnin. You have a pasuk that says about the Torah, Yukorehi Mipninim. The Torah is more precious than Pninim, and the Gemara Darshans over there, Mipninim, Lefnai VeLefnim. So therefore, you have a direct connection. He or her children became Kohen and Golem, and there her children became outstanding Talmud Chacham. A couple of blocks later, the Gemara is discussing discussing something in connection with the avodah of the Kohen Gadol. It brings up a question that Rabbi Chanina asks, and then they say, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had the same question, and Rabbi Chanina is very impressed, and he says, Boyer Eish Shelosan Shor Rishon, come see the question of the earlier generations. Like, look at that, like we say nowadays, Baruch Shekivanti, that I came up with the same good question as an earlier generation did. So then the Gemara is bothered by the fact it sounds like Rav Chanina then is younger than Rav Yeshua ben Levi, but we have something the other way around where it comes out that Rav Chanina is older and more respectable than Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Namely, Omer Rav Yeshua ben Levi, li hiter, Rav Chanina lishtes shachalayim b'shabas fula, that Rav Chanina gave me a heter to drink shachalayim. Shachalayim is a plant in English, it's called watercress. So he allowed me to drink the juice of it on Shabbos when I was suffering from some kind of illness. So the fact that he calls him Reb Chanina implies that he's older. Otherwise, you would have just called him Chanina. So therefore, so how does that fit with what we said, that he said, and the Gemara gets into a bit of discussion of halacha about what exactly was the question. If it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, then of course everything is allowed. And if not, then anyway, Quest juice is something that healthy people normally drink anyway, so there shouldn't be a problem drinking it on Shabbos. Anyway, after the Gemara goes through that whole point, the Gemara says, Maishner Rav Chanina. So why of all people did Rav Yeshua ben Levi ask Rav Chanina about this? The Gemara ends up establishing that he's not so much asking whether he's allowed to do it on Shabbos, mitzvah halacha, he's asking him as a practical matter, does it have medicinal benefit? So then why is he asking Rav Chanina? He should ask a doctor. And the answer is, Mishum debaki b'rafo is haba. Because as a matter of fact, Rav Chanina was expert in matters of medicine. The Amr Rav Chanina, as we find Rav Chanina saying, "Me'olam lo shalani adam al makas pir de levana b'choya." Nobody ever asked me about what to do when they were bit by a white mule and he survived to tell about it. So in other words, we see people would come and ask Rav Chanina for medical advice. So he's saying when a person was bitten by such a white mule, no, and they came to ask me about it, he never survived it. So the Gemara says, Valkach, this actually is connected with this week's parasha. Later in this week's parasha, at the end, you have the whole history of Bnei Edom and Bnei Seir and everything. You have Hu Ano, Asher Motza, Sayyem Bamidbar. And Rashi mentions over there that it means, we learned this in Pesachim, that he crossbred animals to produce mules, and specifically these dangerous white mules that we're talking about over here. So the Gemara says, Valkach, Zin and Dechaye. The fact is, we see people do survive such a bite. The answer is, Eim of Achoyos. Not the choya, meaning that he lived, but the choyos, that it, in the feminine, meaning the wound, ever healed. So Rav Chanina is saying, anytime somebody was bitten by such an animal, the wound never actually healed. So the Gemara says, Vakach is in the mitzi. The fact is, we do see that such wounds heal as well. And the answer is, besumkan iho v'chivran resh kar ayo kaminan, what we're talking about is not where the whole animal is white, but the body of the animal is red, and the tips of the legs above the hooves are white. Those are the dangerous kind, where if they bite a person, then it's never going to heal. And that's what Rav Chanina is saying, that whenever anybody asked him about it, it never healed, because that's how it is. It's a very dangerous kind of thing. Habona points out over here, there's kind of a remez in it. Like you have people, the most dangerous ones are the ones who really are the red one, the ones who are actually red, representing gvura and representing violence and whatever. And then they put forward their white feet as pretending we're the good guys. They're the most dangerous of all. Anyway, the point is that we see that Rav Chanina was an expert on medicine, and that's why Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was consulting him. Further on in the Perek, the Mishnah says, Notlos hamachta b'yimino v'sakaf b'smolo. The Kohen Gadol took the pan of coals in his right hand and the spoon of Ketores in his left hand. Earlier, by the way, at the beginning of the Perek, the Gemara discusses the point, shouldn't the spoon of Ketores, which is the main avoda, be in his right hand? You're always supposed to do avoda with your right hand. And the Gemara answers basically because the pan was a lot heavier and hot, and therefore it would be very difficult for the Kohen Gadol to carry it in his left hand, so they gave him a break and allowed him to carry it in his right hand and the spoon of Ketores in his left, since anyway something's going to have to be held in the left hand. Ben Yoyada points out this kind of a remez in it, you know, like this, usually the left is associated with Gvura, and therefore we don't want the Avodah to be done with it, because the Avodah of the Kohen is supposed to be Chesed, but on Yom Kippur, there's no, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, the Satan has no right to accuse, so therefore it doesn't matter if he's carrying the Ketores in his left. Anyway, Hoya Mahalach Behekel, he's walking in the Hekel, Adshu Magia, Leben Shtei Poroiches Hamavdilus, Ben Akkodesh, Ben Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then he reached the two Poroichesin, as we're going to explain, that separated the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Uve Nehem Amma, where there was an Amma space between. The idea is, the Gemara is going to talk about it a little bit over here. Most of the discussion is not in Ein Yaakov, but a little bit of it is that in the second Bais Mikdash, they had a suffix like this. In the first, in the Mishkan, there was one curtain between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadosh. When they built the first Bais Mikdash, there was a one amma thick wall between them. Now, when they built the second Bais Mikdash, they had a suffix whether that one amma belongs properly to the Kodesh or whether it belongs to the Kodesh HaKadosh. Now, the problem was, the Gemara explains in Bava Basra, since the ground floor of the second Bais Mikdash was taller than the ground floor of the first, the Pasuk says on the second Bais Mikdash, Godu Yiv Kvod Abayis Azeh, Ha'achar in Min Arishin, and the Gemara explains in Bava Kama, it was greater in two ways. It was taller and also lasted longer, 420 years against 410. So therefore, they wouldn't be able to build a wall only one amma thick and have it be 40 ammas tall. It wouldn't be stable. So and the Gemara explains it, right? And they can't just say that they're going to build the wall only to a certain height, and then they'll put a poroichas to cover the rest, because they have the Kabbalah, that's all one or all the other. Either it's all wall or it's all poroichas. So the result was, and since they couldn't make the wall any wider than one amma, because the blueprint of the Bais Mikdash is min hashamayim. So therefore, instead, they had to make two poroichas, because of the suffix, so they had to make a poroichas, but because of the suffix, they had to make two poroichas in with an amma space between them. That amma is called amma traxin. The word traxin, Rashi mentions from the Oruch that the word traxin comes from two Greek words that means inside and outside, because it was a suffix, whether this one amma belongs to the inside or the outside. Tosfos instead gives a different explanation that the word trak means to close in Aramaic, and the word sin is related to the word Sinai. So it means that these are the poreichosin that enclose the oren, which has in it the luchos that were given on Har Sinai. Anyway, so that's how it was. In the third Bais Hamikdash, by the way, Shibon al-Asid Lavri, we learned this past summer when we were learning Yechezkel during the 3 weeks. Yechezkel describes that wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedoshim will be two amas thick. So therefore, you don't have a problem, even though the height is going to be like the second Bais Hamikdash, 40 amas tall, maybe even taller, but it'll be two amas thick instead of one, therefore it'll be stable. So then they don't need the two poroichesin anymore. Anyway, but here, in the second Bais Hamikdash, they had two poroichesin, so he walks until he reaches there, uveneim amma, and again, between them there's an amma space. Rabbi Yossi says no, there was only one poreches lovad shenema, because the pasuk says van mishkan v'yivdila poreches, the pasuk says the poreches should separate between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so why do you need two? Mefarshim discuss what is Rabbi Yossi holding exactly. Does he hold that it's fine to have one, it's fine to have one and just there will be one extra amma in the Kodesh or in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or does he hold Bechlal, there was no suffix in the first place? Different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities of what Rabbi Yossi holds exactly. Maybe Rabbi Yossi holds you can put the one parechas exactly in the middle of that one amma. Whatever. Continues the Mishnah, going back according to the Chachamim, there were two parechas in, Hachitzoyna hoisa prufa min adarim, the outer one, the one that faced toward the Heichel, was pinned open from the south, meaning they needed a space for the Kohen Gadol to go in, and after all, his hands aren't free because he's carrying the calf and machta in his two hands, so before Yom Kippur, they would fold back one amma of the parochas, of the outer parochas, and pin it back with a golden hook. And the inner one would be on the north side. So Mahalach Benehem. So he starts walking. What he does is he goes in from the south side. He walks between the two Parechasin, Ad Shemagil at Safin, until he reaches the northern wall of the Hekel. He deal at Safin. Once he reaches the north, Hoifach Panav Ladarim, then he turns, now he's inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, through the side, through the part of the Parechas over there that was pinned open on the north, and now he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now he turns towards the south, Mahalach with Smoila Ima Parechas, and he walks with his left side along the Parechas, Ad Shomagila Oren, until he reaches in front of the Oren. Why do they have it like that? For the outer one on the south side, and the north one open on the in, on the north side. So Mephoshim explain, that actually the Ritva over here brings, because that way when he's inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he's walking alongside the Parechas, his right side is facing towards the Aron, which is more respectful. So they had to have him come in from the north, and that way when he's walking along over there and halfway down the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then he has his right side facing towards the Aron. He gil Oren. Once he reached in front of the Oren, nostanas amachta ben shnei abadim. Then he put down the pan of coals between the two poles of the Oren. Which this is, by the way, the Mishnah is kind of giving us a hybrid a little bit, because first it mentioned the two Parechasin, which they had only in the second Mishnah, and now it's talking about the Oren, which they only had in the first Mishnah. The next Mishnah mentions that after the Oren was taken into Golos, so we're going to learn later on what exactly happened to it, then all you have there is the Evan Shsia, and he would put it where the poles of the Oren would have been in the time of the first Mishnah. Anyway. So he puts the macht over there. Sabra Sakturus Agabia Gacholim. Then he shook out gently the Kturus onto the coals. Vinismala, Kolabayas, Koloyoshan, and now the entire room is filled with the smoke of the Kturus. And as we learned before, that's the proper way to do it, to put the Kturus on the coals in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, unlike the Tzedukim who claim that you're supposed to put it outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and come in with the Kturus already burning. That was, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that because he's in there all alone, nobody's watching him, then they have to beswear him before Yom Kippur that he's going to do it the right way. Anyway, the Yotza, by the way, the Yerushalmi mentions a very interesting point in this regard. Where is he getting light from to be able to see what he's doing? So you have the Menorah, but the Menorah is in the Heichal. Now he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There's a wall of Poroichasin separating it. So the Yerushalmi explains in the first Beis Mikdash, since the Oren was there, the Oren itself, the Derech Nes, shone so brightly that he was able to see very clearly what he's doing. The second Beis Mikdash, where there's no Oren, all he has is the glow of the coals, then yeah, he had to kind of work in the semi-darkness over there and feel his way around. The Yotzo Vole Derech Beis Knisos, he goes out the same way he came in. So he goes back to the south, and then he goes back to the north, and then goes in from there, and so forth. And by the way, Rashi also adds the point that he would walk backwards. He wouldn't turn his back to the Aron, the same way as we don't turn our back to the Aron in Kodesh and Shul nowadays. Instead, he would walk backwards until he reached the Parechas. And he comes out to the Heichel from the south side, like the way he came in. And there, in the outer chamber, in the Heichel, he would say a short tefillah, which the Gemara brings the nusach of his tefillah. We say it in the Avodah on Yom Kippur. He would not take very long over that tefillah, so as not to frighten the Jewish people, because they never know. He's going to make it out of the Kodesh Kodashim alive, so therefore he'd keep his tefillah short. Continues the Mishnah. Mishnit al Oren. Once the Oren was taken away, and we'll learn later on what exactly happened with it. Eben Hoisa Shami Most Hanaviim Arishonim. All along there was a stone there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim from the time of the Uli Neviim. Ushsiya Hoisa Nikros. It was called the Eben Shsiya. The Gavoyim and Earth Gimel Etzboys. It sticks up from the floor 3 Etzboys. V'ala Hayonosin as a Machta. And so now in the second Mishnah, she would place the Machta on there, which would be in the space where the Oren, where the poles of the Oren would have been in the first Beis Hamikdash. You have, by the way, nowadays you have the dome of the rock, the Arab mosque there on top of the Har HaBayis, which according to most opinions is above the Kodesh HaKadoshim, although you have other opinions. But anyway, the rock that's inside there is then identified generally as the Evan Shsia. The Radvaz talks about it in a Teshuvah. He points out And it's, you know, based on description that you have from people who've been there, the rock projects a lot more than three etzbois off the ground. It projects up several amos above the ground. What's going on? He says because at various times the goyim actually during all the hundreds of years that the goyim, first the Romans and the Arabs and whatever, have controlled the Har HaBayis, they've altered the topography. They've dug down into it in order to make it lower. Originally the Har HaBayis was supposed to be much taller. It should be higher than the rest of Yerushalayim. They deliberately lowered the profile of it. So among other things, they dug around there and they carved out and whatever. And the result is that now the stone, which is part of the actual bedrock over there, sticks up much further than the rest of the floor than it did in the time of the Mishnah. With that said, though, again, you do have different opinions on it. You have like 12 different opinions that I've seen where exactly the Beis Mikdash was located in the Har HaBayis of nowadays. And among them are opinions that the rock inside the Dome of the Rock is not actually the Eben Shtia, but rather the base of the Mizbeach or various other possibilities that they bring up. Okay. Anyway. So the Gemara says, in connection with this business about the Amma Traxin, this Amma space between the two Parochasin, whether it belongs to the Kurdish or the Kurdish HaKadoshin, so Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Boy Yosef Ish Hutzel. Yosef, from Yosef, the man of Hutzel, whenever we say Ish, means he was the important person, so like the leader of the city of Hutzel, he asked, you have a pasuk in Malachim that describes the construction of the first Beis Mikdash, and it has the pasuk udvir b'secha bayis mitnima hechin. He prepared a dvir inside within the house on the inside. The dvir, some Mephoshim explains, means Rashi over here seems to be understanding that the dvir means this wall. The wall that separated the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. On the Psukim, some of the Mephoshim explain that the Dvir means the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself. Anyway, Heichin, he prepared, was sitting Shomas Aron Bris Hashem to place there the Oren of Hashem's covenant. So, Ibori Lahu, so the question becomes, Heichi Kama Kra, what does the Pasuk mean with this word Mipnima? Do we read the Pasuk with Dvir Mitzvah HaBayis Mipnima Heichin Lesitin Shom? Are you saying that he prepared a Dvir, that he built a Dvir, this wall in Amathik? And inside, beyond that machitza, beyond that wall, is Heichin Lesitin Shom, is the place where he prepared to put the Aron, which would imply, therefore, that the wall does not belong to the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself. Or maybe the meaning is that the dvir is within the house on the and it's from the inside, meaning that the space of that wall actually belongs to the space of the inside. It's considered part of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So in short, the fact that we said there was a suffix in the second Beis Mikdash, according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, whether that Amatraxin belonged to the inside or the outside. So we're pointing out, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that Yosef Ish Hutzel pointed out that actually the Pasuk itself that describes the building of that wall in the first Beis Mikdash is written in an ambiguous way where you can't tell which one it is. And that created the suffix. But the Gemara asks, Mina Sapkalei, did Yosef Ish Hutzel in fact have a doubt about that question? Actually, you know what? We'll save that for tomorrow, actually. Okay. Yon Yem Mashiach Go'ola. Tess, what is today? Yavdalib Kislev, thank you. Okay, it's right. Yeah, it's the anniversary of the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin. Okay. There are people who argue, yes, sure, Hasidus is a very nice thing, and we know it's compared to pearls, so what? I don't need any pearls. It's enough that my levushim are the shlemus. My levushim mean machshava dibra maisa of hayak mitzatara. Jewelry I'll have also. I don't need Magolius. I don't need pearls, the person will say. So you have to know, says the Rebbe, first of all, there's a din in Shulchan Aruch that you have to learn pnimiyas satara just like you learn the rest of the Torah. Not only that, because of the darkness of Ikvus and the Meshicha, we have to learn Hasidus in order that the levushim should be complete. Actually, there was one of this week's projects, Lakuta Sichas. Sichas was talking about the idea that you have two things. On the one hand, we're saying because of the darkness of Golos. On the other hand, we're also saying because Tayameh Chaim Zahu, because as we get closer to the Golos, we have more of a taste of Terasa Shamashiach. Anyway, the point is, now in a time like this, when you have the darkness of Ikbis of the Meshicha, so fine, you want to say in previous generations that indeed the pearls, that was fine in earlier generations, but now, when Hinezeh Ermid Achakaslainu, and we have to be ready to go to the Chuppah with Melech Malcha and Lachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do you mean? You don't need any pearls. You need all the jewelry you can get for such a tremendous chuppah. halacha. We're starting the halacha siman ayin vav in Kivzah Shulchan Aruch, the dinim of the tefillas on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The minhag is to daven Friday night ma'ariv earlier than on weekdays, and it's a good idea in order to have Kabbalah Shabbos as early as possible, as long as it's after plagamin. People who regularly daven ma'ariv bizmana on weekdays of Tesek Achavim, as we do, they can do it earlier on Shabbos. Even though now you're going to say, it's called tauti de sasri. You have a concept. For example, you can't daven mincha after plag and then daven ma'ariv before plag, because that would be contradictory. You can't daven mincha after plag before tzeisik achavim and then daven ma'ariv during that same time, because it's tauti de sasri. It's two things that contradict one another. Are you considering this time to be part of the day or part of the night? So here you might have a time when you usually daven mincha late, at the time when now you're starting Kabbalah Shabbos and Ma'ariv. That's not a problem, because there you have the special mitzvah to be mosif mechol al hakodesh. However, the Alter Rebbe does caution, again, it is true that you can't daven mincha on such a day after plag mincha. You want to do that. You want to bring in Kabbalah Shabbos early, then you have to daven mincha before plag. Here in Kran Heights, there's a shul where they do that during the summertime, actually, and they do. They make sure to daven mincha before plag, and then they have an early Kabbalah Shabbos. And that's fine. Another halacha, when it comes to the bracha hashgivenu, we don't end with shomer samay yisrael la'av, like on weekdays, because that's a bracha for the Jewish people, that in general Hashem should protect us. We don't need protection on Shabbos, because Shabbos itself protects us. So instead we say frois, and we finish off baruch hatashana poris sukkah shalom, etc. Same thing on Yom Tov. If you mistakenly finish off like on weekday, so if you remember right after saying La'ad, then you right away finish off with the proper ending on Purim Shuk Astralim. If you only remember after Toshkut Adibur, then you don't change it, you just leave it as it is.